So I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you and that you're still here this late in the day. I promise to make it fun, I hope. The shift is away from the adults and now on kids. But really understand that kids don't live in an environment exclusive of their parents most often. And so we were really looking to see how parent-child communication, parental role modeling behaviors of alcohol use, and influence the alcohol use of adolescent girls. While I'm a co-author on one, I am the lead on the other. It was data that I was funded for through the National Institute of Mental Health. Oh, this does. Oh, I guess I got it in there. So what I did is I kind of combined these together. So I'm going to give kind of the overarching study information and then present the results separately. So hopefully it makes sense. It did to me at the time I was doing it. So in general, the goal of the work was to better understand how maternal factors contribute to the alcohol use of adolescent Black and Latina females, including relationship quality with their mom, maternal communication about alcohol use, again, role modeling. We did include religiosity, and then looking at maternal HIV status. So this study, by the way, in case I might say it later, but it was in the Northeast. It was in Philadelphia, Newark, New Jersey, and New York City is where this data, primary data came from. So what we know in terms of individual factors is that girls are more likely to report drinking than do boys in high school. They tend to begin drinking at younger ages, and they're more likely to become dependent if they initiate alcohol use. So almost two-thirds report drinking by the end of high school, and 43% report drinking in the last month. This is from YRBS. Adolescent girls are also at increased risk for depression, which may increase their alcohol use. What we know about family factors are things like religiosity, which can influence kind of intrafamilial values, role modeling. So it's great when parents say not to do something, but if they're actually doing it, it's pretty hard to get that message across. And then communication, so expressing to your adolescent what you would like of them. So I'd like you not to drink, or I'd like you to delay drinking, is important and impacts alcohol use, both initiation and ongoing use. We also know that maternal HIV impacts family functioning and believe it may contribute to shifts in family roles, potential family strain, and we know it's correlated to adolescent risk engagement, both sexual risk and substance use. So what we were less clear about, or what the literature is less clear about, is are what qualities either related to parent-child communication or to other intrafamilial factors influence alcohol use among adolescent girls. And so that was the goal of these two studies, is to understand those. So the sample was collected, in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, Newark, New Jersey, and New York City between July 2008 and June 2009 through community service organizations and HIV clinics in those three cities. It was a non-probability sample. There were 176 mother-daughter dyads. So to be included, moms had to have a daughter between the age of 14 to 18 who was HIV negative and willing to participate. So data was collected separately but simultaneously. About 37% of the sample were HIV positive women, adults. So here we go. Here's the first one. So the first one's really focused on communication. The second one's more focused on role modeling. We hypothesized that relationship satisfaction, so how good your relationship is with your mom, was going to be positively associated with mom's attitudes about drinking, so do I think it's okay for my adolescent to be drinking, and self-efficacy around communication, so how comfortable I am talking to my adolescent about drinking or not drinking. We also hypothesized that this relationship would be associated with actual communication, so that the better the relationship between mom and daughter, the more likely mom was going to report, or kid was going to report, I apologize, kid was going to report that mom had talked about this, and that mom's attitudes and efficacy and actual communication would mediate this relationship between relationship satisfaction and alcohol use. We did use this whole project, it was a family expansion of the theory of planned behavior. So it is also theoretically grounded in a good traditional public health theory. And so with kind of mom-influenced behavior, mom qualities influencing mom's attitudes and control beliefs, and then kids' beliefs and behaviors. So this is just the measures, which may or may not be of interest to you. They were all valid standardized measures, relationship satisfaction, couple single item measures around attitude about alcohol use, communication self-efficacy, communication about alcohol use. And we did, as a covariate, just include adolescent depressive symptoms using the CESD 10. And that's because of the high correlation between alcohol use and depression, particularly among adolescent girls. The analyses were done using M+. We had two path analyses that we ran simultaneously, comparing HIV-positive families and HIV-negative families. Good model fit. So here's kind of what it looked like. So we have relationship satisfaction as it's kind of the same model here, right? We just see it statistically. So the relationships that are statistically significant are nice little stars. But basically, we did find that relationship satisfaction, so how close I was to mom or how satisfied I was with my relationship, did contribute to mom's efficacy to communicate about not using alcohol. And that efficacy did predict whether or not the daughter reported that mom had communicated. And it also, mom's self-efficacy was directly correlated to alcohol use. So for those of you who know the theory, it maps on actually very, very nicely to the theory of planned behavior. So more mom, the better the skills mom had in communicating about not using alcohol, the less likely adolescents were to be drinking. So the first was HIV positive. The second kind of we see some of the same findings, except we don't have a direct relationship. So HIV-positive moms, their efficacy predicted both actual communication but also whether or not kid used. In HIV-negative moms, it was just efficacy predicted actual communication but didn't have a direct correlation to adolescent use. Does that make sense? Yes or not? I know at the end of the day, the faces are starting to feel like I should dance. Okay, so the second study looked at family factors related to alcohol use. So here the first one shows communication. And if you know the literature, you know that the best predictor is kind of communication. We know that if you're talking about it, kids are more likely to do it, even above and beyond their influence from peers. So the second thing we wanted to look at was really this role modeling, because I'm a strong believer and that we can talk all we want, but if we're not actually modeling the behaviors, it can be very difficult, particularly for adolescents, to kind of get on board with our messages. My colleagues have presented prior to me kind of have also used an ecological approach. So this really is that same ecological approach where we're looking at the individual factors. Look at them, I'm losing them. They're running out fast. Family factors and then the interaction between HIV status and alcohol behaviors. So here we wanted to look both across groups and then within groups. So we compared compared HIV positive to HIV negative mother-daughter dyads. And then we separated the two and said, well, within families who are HIV positive or within families who are HIV negative, what does this look like? So again, I hypothesized that role modeling, if mom wasn't drinking, kid was going to be less likely to report drinking. That maternal religiosity or how important and how important religion was to mom would be negatively associated with alcohol use. So those kids more religion, less likely to use alcohol, and that these kind of role modeling behaviors in moms and daughters' alcohol use might be moderated by HIV status. And that was based on the literature, kind of knowing that HIV can increase stress in families and that alcohol might be a coping mechanism. Again, we used standardized measures and a combination of standardized measures and single items to look at role modeling, communication, religiosity, and depressive symptoms. And we were able to do this because we had mom's reports of all her information as well as all of kids' reports. Yeah, this one we use Stata, logistic regression models. Again, we looked at the full sample first, controlling for HIV status, and then looked within group. So cross group and then within group. Correlation table, I'm not going to read that one to you. Kind of thing less interesting than the actual findings. So what I think is really interesting, a couple things that are, I think kind of no-brainers, right? So older kids were more likely to report drinking. Depression was, associated with alcohol use, higher depression, higher alcohol use. HIV status in this model there weren't differences between HIV-infected families and non-infected families, which was contrary to what we had hypothesized. Role modeling only mattered for HIV positive families in which mom was HIV positive. Little count, which was interesting. Our assumption would have been that role modeling across the board would have mattered, and that the importance of religion, while it was important in the full model, when you broke the model apart, it didn't hold. It was confusing. It was a little confusing. So again, there were significant differences in influencers by maternal HIV status. Relationship satisfaction indirectly was related to daughter's alcohol use in dyads with an HIV positive mother. In HIV positive households, daughter's age, level of depression, and mom's alcohol use were all associated with daughter's alcohol use. And in the full sample, the importance of religion was negatively associated with alcohol use. I think what was really interesting for us is that sometimes we don't think about separating out a model, right? So we just throw everybody in and we see significant results and we attribute that to the group, and we kind of like report the results and go on our way. And part of the reason we started to look within group was because we found some what we would have considered inconsistent findings. But it actually made the story much more interesting. And you really saw, particularly if you're thinking about intervention, that these families aren't the same. And so the way you intervene might need to be different. And so I think that I believe was a strength of some of our findings. Overall, obviously this is a convenient sample, and I think there was a lot of homogeneity between the HIV positive and negative moms. I shouldn't say I think, I know. They were from the same communities, they were all pretty low income in heavy, densely, urban areas, high proportion of HIV, high proportion of violence and other kind of environmental stressors. Again, like my colleague before me, both colleagues before me, this is self-report data, so we know that there might be bias, and again, it's cross-sectional, so causality could not be determined. I think that, the message is that while we don't want to highlight that, HIV-positive families are always different, that there are some nuanced differences in these family dynamics and family relationships, and if we ignore those differences, we're just not learning the whole story. I think it became clear in both studies, and in the work we did with this data on sexual risk behavior as well, that family relationship or parent-child, mother-daughter relationship satisfaction was literally the most influential predictor, more than communication, more than monitoring, and more than role modeling. And when we talk about kind of the four parenting behaviors, those are the four that are most commonly talked about. But in this work, it was really that relationship. And so I think it's a nice intervention point. We can help people build better relationships with their kids. It's something that's feasible to intervene on, which is always nice in terms of implications. In the end, as my colleagues have talked in terms of looking at things ecologically, this becomes really important that, particularly for adolescents who are minors and don't often control their environments and a lot of the decision-making that goes on in their household or in their school settings or in community environments, that we need to look beyond kind of just the individual level and take into consideration other factors that might be influencing risk. So I appreciate your time. I look forward to questions if you have them, and I hope the condensed version ends a little early, and that was helpful for you. So thank you for your time.
Thank you.